Hello, Career Cohort. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Emily Wong, founder of Words of Distinction. We talk about tools for achieving career success, inspirational stories about overcoming career and life challenges, and how we can recalibrate our perspective to better enjoy the journey forward. Hi there. You are going to be so excited to hear my very special guest, Kelly Thompson, because she's going to be talking about speaking up and presenting with confidence. She's the founder of the Clarity and Confidence Women's Leadership Program and is an award-winning coach. She's also an author, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but I really want to dive right on in because I think this topic resonates with so many people. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I like to start with origin stories. And I know that you have an interesting story. You didn't just become a coach. You had a journey. You had inspiring people in your life. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. How far do we want to go back? Should we go back to the very beginning?
Go back to your great grandma.
Okay, sounds good. We will talk about her. So because she is in the book. But thank you so much for having me. You know, I grew up in a small town. I went to a Catholic school. So when we think about origin stories, I learned a lot of rules growing up, like rules like your skirts will be this length. It will reach these fingertips. You will behave this way. You will believe these things. And, you know, of course, all of that's very well intentioned. And, you know, my family had high goals for me. They're like, you know, you should go to college and then get a job at a stable company so you can climb the ladder and have benefits. And you get married at a young age so that you have energy and for kids and all these things. And, you know, before the good ones are taken. And, you know, I'm kind of, you know, going and sharing along this route of my origin story of growing up in a small Midwestern town, Catholic school, went to college, you know, got that job that was secure in banking, because a lot of following those rules actually really killed a lot of my confidence, and they really impacted my ability to speak up. And so when I think about speaking up, a lot of my lack of confidence in that area was honestly because I was such a darn good rule follower. I'm like, I'm just going to go and I'm going to check all these boxes and I'm going to follow all these rules and show people how good that I can be. But the problem was, is I was really good at checking everyone else's boxes, but I never really stopped and asked myself, do I even want this? And so when it came to speaking up at work, having the confidence to share my ideas, being in the right relationship, a spoiler alert, that marriage that I entered into when I was 23, well, we got divorced when I was 30. I didn't have a lot of confidence to speak up because I didn't even really know what I stood for. I was really good at following everyone else's rules. And so here I was, this person in the wrong job and the wrong marriage. And I just didn't have a lot of confidence to speak up in a way that felt good and authentic to me and make the changes that I wanted. And when I was 30 and some of that started happening, I really kind of had a big aha in my early 30s of, do I even want this? I mean, maybe I feel like so much imposter syndrome and so much doubt and so much hesitancy about speaking up and using my voice because I don't even really love what I do. You know, I don't love this life that I've created. I don't even know what I want. I don't know what I love, all these sort of things. Ironically, I was a corporate trainer. So when it came to training material, it was just like following more rules. I'm like, I will be a good trainer about presenting these things according to the rules, right?
Right.
And, you know, so I was in, you know, banking. I had a great job. I was leading training teams and, you know, leading HR teams. But I had to make a change. At that point, I started to kind of take inventory of myself and ask, well, what do I really want? What do I value? What do I believe? What makes me excited? I switched from banking to work for a technology company. And that was much more in alignment with my values. And I think a little more confidence came, a little more speaking up came. And then I actually went to go work for another author. I worked for Cy Wakeman. She's the author of Reality-Based Leadership. And I traveled all over the country delivering leadership development training. And again, she was such a good mentor to me and really just let me spread my wings and helping me discover and support the things in life that I was really passionate about and, you know, things that really lit me up. And I think that gave me even more confidence. And then ultimately in 2019, I left to go start my own coaching practice. And so I've been doing that ever since. So since 2019, I've been coaching leaders, especially women leaders, doing leadership training events, and now just wrote my book. And I think, you know, all of that has just been a practice and really starting to listen to and honor the things that I really want and that I really value. So in a nutshell, that's the origin story. Now I'm remarried to my husband, Jason, and I have a 17-year-old daughter. So
yeah. So you're setting a great role model for her. And just a real quickly, so you were talking on another podcast about your great grandma, who was a pioneer woman. And you know, when I was little, I used to fantasize about being a pioneer woman. And I think it's because they were so confident, right? Yes. They had to get things done. They didn't get in their own head. They were just busy living, right?
Yes.
And just, you know, just a little bit about your grandma, your great grandma.
Oh, 100%. So my great grandma, her name was Elizabeth. Elizabeth was born in the 1900s, and her dad knew she was different. He gave her a job at their local hardware store. And so she learned, you know, how to value things, what the hardware store would buy things for, what they'd sell things for, margin. She learned about marketing. She learned about customer behavior. She just became very shrewd. In the early 1900s, she went to college. And if you can recall, like, women hadn't even earned the right to vote when she went to college.
Right.
So she got to college, she got a degree, she got married, but she wasn't content to be a housewife like a lot of women were housewives. Her husband worked on the railroad. They pinched pennies during the Great Depression and were able to buy this plot of land, this ranch in western Nebraska, which our family still owns today. And she ran that ranch. And let me tell you, she was short in stature at 4'11", but wow. Like, he was big in personality. You know, while her husband was away at the railroad, she would go into stores and, you know, negotiate things to the bottom dollar. Because remember, she knew the price of things. And right. My dad, she primarily raised my dad. And so my dad would tag along, and he would tell stories that when, you know, Grandma Elizabeth walked in, people would just go get the manager. Like, they wouldn't even like waste time. They just went back. They knew she was here to negotiate. You know, she was a widow in 1959. And so if you can remember, women couldn't even take out credit in their own name until 1974. And so she was paying cash for things. She was shrewd. She was negotiating, pinching right. pennies. She bought a bus for our farm with cash so she could like house seasonal workers. And my point in like making, you know, when I really think about who inspires me or this story is, you know, she wasn't afraid to use her voice and be who she was in an era that just didn't support or recognize those sort of leadership skills in women. And so I think it just really gives us permission that, like, because she was shrewd, because she was assertive, because she was forthcoming, people called her a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they called her a witch, you know, bossy, aggressive.
But because she
wasn't sure, you know, if this was, you know, suitable for work. We got to protect maybe sensitive ears, but yes. And, you know, but because she was all those things, she also left a legacy for her family. She built mm-hmm. a farm that fed hungry families. She employed workers. And so, you know, because she was courageous enough to show up as herself and be all those things, she actually did a lot of good for herself and her family and her community. And so when I have moments of hesitation, you know, or, you know, nervousness of holding back, you know, she's such a great person to, you know, even ask myself, well, what would Elizabeth do right now?
Yeah, that's so great to have somebody there on your shoulder like that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think we all go through, you know, I'm much more confident than I was 30 years ago, but I still have my moments, right?
Yes.
And I think this conversation we're going to have about presentations is so, you know, this is big on everybody's list. How can I get over that? How do I get over feeling nervous and anxiety before these big presentations?
Mm-hmm. I have an answer you're probably not going to want to hear. And that is, I don't think you ever do. You know, one of the things that I talk with women about is, you know, I've been coaching and training since I was 25 years old. I'm now almost 42. I still get nervous. Mm-hmm. I got nervous before we turned on to record this podcast.
So did I.
I get nervous every time I speak in front of a group. I get nervous every time I lead a presentation. And I think sometimes what hurts us is the belief that we shouldn't be nervous, because then what do we do to ourselves? Like we like, just put yourself in the moment of before you've had to speak in front of a meeting or a group mm-hmm. or whatnot. You might feel like that energy, those nerves like rising in your body, right? Maybe you feel a little heat in your neck, a little bit of butterflies. And so what do we do? Oh, why am I nervous? I shouldn't feel nervous. and we kind of start to shame ourselves.
Right.
And I don't really know anyone who's ever shamed themselves into more confidence. So what I really encourage women to do is just notice it. Like, oh, I just noticed that I'm feeling nervous.
Yep. Yep.
And just give it a name. Like, oh, this is doubt. Maybe it's a little imposter syndrome. Maybe it's a little nerves. Maybe it's a little excitement in there too. Right.
Yep,
but then
yep.
just normalizing it and just saying, you know, doubt is a normal and healthy human emotion. And if you never, ever felt doubt, like we probably would be having a conversation about you being on the sociopathic spectrum, right?
Right. Absolutely.
And so, you know, this doubt is, and I often share with my clients, doubt has preceded many of mine and my clients' biggest breakthroughs, biggest projects, biggest impacts, because, you know, it often means that you're stretching your comfort zone. So doubt is normal and healthy, and it keeps us humble and curious. And so instead of trying to resist and fight that feeling, what I really work on in my own self and in my clients is like, let's take care of our bodies. So, you know, we're feeling that emotion. We can notice it. We can normalize it. I really encourage them to take 4-count breaths. Slowing down that nervous system, breathing in for 4 counts, breathing out for 4 counts. If you could see me, you would see I'm holding up a glass of ice water right now, because even just the act of hydrating, breathing can slow down that nervous system to a place where you're at least not acting out of fight or flight mode, but can kind of bring you back into that executive functioning where you feel like you can still, while feeling doubt and nerves, put on a successful presentation.
Right. Absolutely. I think too, one of the things that I do is I kind of get big.
Yes.
I make myself big by putting my arms back. It also creates more energy, I think. Right.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, one of my favorite quotes is by Dr. Brené Brown. Courage starts with showing up and letting ourselves be seen. Mm-hmm. And almost 2 years ago, it was October, 2020. And I was listening to podcasts and I thought, well, I would love to do something extra for my clients because, you know, I write resumes, I write LinkedIn profiles, but I wanted to add a little something. And I was nervous. And I said, you know what? I'm nervous that it's not going to be perfect. I'm nervous that the technology is not going to be great. I'm nervous I'm going to skip over things or stutter or whatever. And so I invited my friend Pooja Dang on and we talked about perfection and getting over perfection. So I think that that's kind of what you're saying too, is just to kind of like, you know, put yourself out there, prepare, but you know, you've got to put yourself out there. And I heard you talking on another podcast about the 3 profitability mindsets of authenticity, alignment, and advocacy. And I'd love it if you shared a little bit about that in coming up and preparing for your presentations.
Yeah. And this links perfectly to the example you're giving, because here's where me, myself, when I went out on my own or I leveled up in leadership, or a lot of my clients get stuck. And perhaps I bet a lot of your clients too. When they start to level up in leadership, right? You wrote them this awesome resume and LinkedIn profile. They get the promotion. They got the title. They get in and they start to realize, oh, I'm more visible. I have a higher title. My decisions are seen by more people. My voice matters more because now I'm, you know, contributing to decisions. And because it's at a higher level, that exposure comes because there's opportunity for more critique. So I just want to like honor and own that sometimes I think when our clients are leveling up, they start to realize, oh, this is requiring me to get big. This is exposure. People are criticizing my decisions or seeing my decisions. And so sometimes that can really be a source of doubt and imposter syndrome. And so I want to walk through what I use personally as a model for speaking up, because I am a really big introvert. I've always been an introvert. It's hard for me to speak up. I always think of all the good ideas and things I wished I would have said 6 hours after the meeting. And so as I went off and started to run my own business and even write my book, I had to start thinking about, I need a framework to share my ideas. Like I need a framework to speak up and be a leader. And so I came up with, just through some experiences, you know, but I want to do it as myself. Because I think sometimes when people get promoted, we're like, oh, you know, if I can just speak up and say it like Emily, then I'll be successful. But when we try to copy someone else's style, like I don't know about you, but I just come across awkward. Like I remember in corporate, and this goes to my first one, which is authenticity. There was this female leader. Now I worked in banking and it was mostly men in the leadership team. So there was not a lot of female role models, but there was this one female leader and she was extroverted and gregarious and bubbly. And I was like, oh, she just always has the right thing to say at the right time. And I'm more introverted and curious and thoughtful and pensive. And I remember when I tried to be like her, because I kind of saw how she used her voice, like it just didn't work.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
Forced and awkward. Mm-hmm. And so it really led me to ask that first authenticity question that I encourage all of you to think of. If you're listening right now, I want you to think of one thing that you would love to say to someone, or maybe an idea you would like to share, a topic you would love to speak up on. Maybe it's even just in a meeting. And just ask yourself this authenticity question. What do I know for sure about me? You know, are you an introvert? Are you an extrovert? You know, what's your style? What's your communication style? Like, you know how, like, if you ever watch Oprah, she sits down next to people and they're like, what do you know for sure about you? You know, or what do you know for sure? And so really just like, hey, what do I know for sure about me? What unique perspective do I bring? Like, how am I the only person to speak up on this topic because of my life or work experiences? And I think sometimes what also helps people in this authenticity question is even just to ask themselves, like, who else am I representing in this room? I know in my first role overseeing human resources, that was a big one for me in my authenticity and in my courage to speak up, was I'd be sitting in these executive meetings and I'd be all in my own head about speaking up and what should I say. But when I remembered, oh, I'm also here on behalf of the people in this company. And so when I remembered, I'm like their advocate. It became a little easier for me to speak up. So first step is authenticity. What do you know for sure about you? What unique skills do you bring, or who else are you also representing? The second piece comes in, it comes into alignment. And this is really a question of like, well, how do I say what needs to be said, right? Because I think sometimes we've all either done it or we've been in a meeting where someone speaks up and it might be authentic, but the way it comes out, it just doesn't land. Maybe you're like, oh, I did not mean for it to come out that way. Like we've all done it. We're like, oh, geez. Yeah. Or we ruminate afterwards. And so I often ask folks, when you're sitting in the room and you're about to share this idea, and maybe it's just with one other person, maybe you're giving them feedback, or maybe you're telling your boss about an idea that you want to pursue. What are three words that describe how you want that person to feel? And sometimes I think that gets us out of our head and it gets us on to thinking, oh, okay, well, I want them to feel intrigued. I want them to feel supported. And, you know, I want them to feel excited. Okay, well, how would I craft a message that would, you know, make them feel intrigued, supported, and excited? And just notice what comes up for you. You know, I think you can also ask, you know, what do you value in this situation? So, you know, you can ask it of the group, right? So if I share this idea or I speak up in this meeting, like, how do I want to be perceived by the group? How do I want the group to feel? And really start thinking about what you value in that situation and how you can write your script, which I always advocate to just, if you have an idea to share, just write down your script and then ask yourself, okay, is the person hearing this message, hearing it in a way that's going to make them feel A, B, and C? You know, am I writing in that way? And then my last one is, it can be really easy to get into analysis paralysis, really stuck in the authenticity and alignment, right? Okay, yeah. What's my unique perspective? How do I say this? And looping, right? And we get stuck. And so the third one is action. How am I taking action on what is mine to say? And I think sometimes, you know, it's like getting really clear on what is yours to say and maybe what is not yours to say. And sometimes people are like, well, how do I know? And I pull them back to the alignment section and the authenticity section and say, well, what do you uniquely represent? What's in alignment with your values? If it's not in alignment with your values, perhaps you may be speaking up out of motive, right? Or just to be right. Or maybe you might regret saying it. So it's just really slowing down and saying, okay, based on what I know for sure about me, based on what I value in the situation, what is mine to say? Or what is mine to not say? I have some extroverts who love that question. I have a client and she's a talker and she knows it. She goes, Kelly, that question, what is mine to not say? She goes, that has been life-changing. She's like, now other people speak in meetings and I don't get to take on all the work.
Yeah. And I might learn something.
Yeah, yeah. I let other people speak up. It's great. So just to recap, when you think about how am I going to craft my message in a way that feels good to me, ask yourself, okay, what's authentic? What do I know for sure about me? What's in alignment with my values? How do I want to make people feel? And then how am I taking action on what's mine to say or what's not mine to say? And so if you noticed, I probably didn't give you any prescriptive 5 steps to sharing your message, because in this model, you should be coming up with a message or an idea that feels like you. I often say that, you know, we don't find our voice. We just remove everything standing in the way of it. So I'm not going to give you 3 easy ways to speak up. I want to give you a model so that you can uniquely craft your own message.
Right. And it's like personal branding too. It's not about coming up with a fake persona. It's about uncovering who you are and what matters to you. And I think in those meetings, sometimes it can be as much as asking a question.
Yes.
You don't have to be the smartest person in the room. I had this client who she's a very successful executive. And one of her things that she talks about is, I don't have to be the smartest person in the room. In fact, I want to hire brilliant people around me. Mm-hmm. And if I have to ask those questions, that's great. You know, when you're talking about, you know, in those meetings and, oh, why didn't I say that? I had a lot of really great ideas. And I know that they were brilliant because someone else said them.
Oh, isn't that the worst? Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah. So this was early on. I would go to these meetings and there was kind of a big sales and marketing meeting, and it was for a different market. It was the main market and I was kind of on the periphery, but I would go to those meetings and kind of get information to make sure my team was in alignment. But I felt like I was a guest there. And I remember that no one made me feel like I was a guest. It was all in my head that, oh, I don't know about this question. And I would feel my heart, like, just, I felt like everybody could hear my heart beating.
Yeah.
And so I think that going back to that authenticity is so brilliant, because it's just more comfortable to be who you are, right? And you're asking these questions or speaking up from a genuine place, or it could be, as you said, you're kind of in service to that other person because you want to add value and get to what it is that they need, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You bring up a great point with questions. And so, you know, one of the things that I had to discover was, I was an introvert, and you kind of said it. I usually think of all the good things I wanted to say after the meeting. However, one of the things that I realized that I was good at was asking thoughtful questions and spurring conversations about ideas, about asking questions. And so a little tip that I love to give my clients to try is, when they go into meetings, maybe they get the meeting agenda, have them just at the top, because this is what I would do, is I would write down 3 questions, things that I was just curious about, questions that could open up conversation. And lots of times those questions would start with things like, you know, I'm wondering if we, or I'm curious about, because sometimes it's hard to speak up, but if you're someone who asks good questions, like, then you get, it starts conversations, it gets ideas going. And so sometimes even just that can feel safer. So when you think about that, it's like, well, what questions would be in alignment with something that feels authentic to you and what you stand for, right? What questions, you know, would really reflect, you know, what you value in this conversation, and what are the right questions for you to ask? And sometimes, like, that feels safer, is like, I can come with thoughtful questions that are going to begin discussions and not end them.
Yeah. And people appreciate questions. And especially if you have an extrovert in the room, that person, okay, you ask that person and that person will reflect that back on you. And they'll appreciate that. I agree. So when you're preparing for a meeting, what's the best way for, you know, when is it too much, whether it's a presentation or a meeting, when is it too much? Because as you said, we can get into this analysis paralysis, or we're over preparing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I'm preparing for a meeting, or I'm working with clients who prepare for meetings, I really slow down and ask myself, or have them ask themselves, like, what is the outcome I want from this meeting? Like, what do I want people to walk away? Say if I'm delivering the agenda, what do I want people to walk away knowing or doing differently because of this meeting? Because if you can't answer that question, then we need to have an email, right? Mm-hmm. That's a whole other podcast about, is it a meeting or is it an email? But really asking yourself, like, you know, what do I want people to do differently because of this, right? What is the outcome? So those would be some questions I would ask myself and be very clear about, and this is so simple. I'll just give you examples. So I was helping this client prepare a meeting with her leader. It was, you know, a quarterly review, which a lot of leaders have to do. You go in, you bring your PowerPoint deck, and, you know, you review all the things. And she was just really struggling. You know, of course she had the model, but you know how it is. You start throwing in more stuff and then the scope gets crazy. And she's like, I don't even know why I'm having this meeting anymore. Like, we've all been there, right? I do that too when I'm designing training classes. I'm like, wait, well, why are we here? And so we just like really went back to the basics. And this is one of the things that I do often teach clients is, you know, there's kind of like four C's of speaking up. And the first one is like being concise. And I already talked about this, like, you know, what outcomes do I want people to take because of this meeting? And you know what? People can really only handle like three topics. I always say if we're talking for an hour, we can probably handle three core topics, three core things. I mean, we've all been there, right? Where you get pepper sprayed and it's just like, it's all over mm-hmm. and you can't remember. So how am I being concise? What are the three things I need people to walk away with? And then just to be clear about that message. And so what we worked on was like literally the old school model of tell them what you're going to tell them and tell them what you just told them, like so simple. And so in her intro of this meeting, we're going to talk about these three things today as it relates to how our business performed in, you know, Q1, Q2, and Q3. And then she told them, and at the end of the meeting was her recap. So I just told you that we did this, this, and this, and here's what I need you to do. Like, I'm like, you need to be clear. You need to tell people, you need to tell your leader exactly what you need. Like, I need more budget dollars. I need you to turn in reports on time. I need you to open up two more FTEs or whatever it is, because people are horrible guessers. So be concise, be clear. And then I think it's always then going back to the model of like being connected. Like, how do you, you know, just checking in. Am I making them feel the way I want them to feel? You know, what do they want out of this meeting? And then the last one too is just, you know, just be confident. You know, you won't always feel confident, but the actions of confidence often come first, getting going. And then by the time that you're done, like you just feel a lot more confident. So I know that seems overly simplistic, but I have to do this to myself all the time. Tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them what you just told them. Try to keep an hour meeting to about three topics and be very clear on the outcomes you want and the asks you're making of people.
Well, I do think that, I mean, it's something that needs to be repeated because we all feel like, you know, when I'm writing a blog or a newsletter, sometimes I feel like I have to say everything, right? And then I think, no, this is not, they do not want this. Their time is valuable, right? Mm-hmm. So save it for another day. Save that information for another day. And I wonder, you know, I wonder if women, so, you know, this is a little stereotypical, but I think women are more verbal, generally speaking. Maybe this is too much of a stereotype, but maybe we are over preparing or we're thinking that everything has to be in this presentation when it really doesn't. So I love that, just those three nuggets there.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. You said, are women more verbal? There's actually been, I don't know the source of this study because it was shared, but I'll say it was shared by Adam Grant. So if you go find Adam Grant, then you can backtrack it. And the research showed that actually men talk more in meetings. However, you hit on something that's really, really critical. And I want everyone listening to think about this, is that sometimes though, women over-prepare. There's the imposter syndrome. Am I qualified enough? You know, because they haven't typically maybe seen themselves in the rooms where decisions are made. And I see that all the time, women undervaluing themselves, over-preparing, over-gathering, over-researching. And so sometimes that can mean stuffing the blog with full of stuff or stuffing a sales page so that they can prove that they're competent or stuffing the presentation. So it's not so much as the amount of time talking, but you hit on something that I want all of us to pause and think about is, am I overstuffing my presentation in a very unconscious way to show that I'm valuable and I'm worthy, when actually the opposite is true. Like people's brains can only handle so much. Like I often say to my clients, and I've talked about this a lot too, is that the more clear I've been in my business, the more success I've had. And clear, not meaning like overstuffing, but like clear about my message, clear about who I work with, clear about what I want, because clarity just pierces and people know what to do with it. So instead of focusing on like consuming and overstuffing content, I would focus on clarity. Like success loves clarity.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with resume writing, because
you
don't want to appeal to everybody. It is marketing. And so it's like, okay, this is who I want to target, and this is all I need to say. Yes. And I'm, you know, it's a battle. It's a battle with myself sometimes, but also, you know, explaining to my clients that you don't have to have every word in there. It's not important. And save some of it for your career stories in your interviews, right?
Yes.
So I get that. And I'm a big fan of Adam Grant, by the way. So yes. And one of the things too that he talks about is looking at things as an experiment. Mm-hmm. And it's his latest book. It's about
Think Again.
Thank you. In that book, he's talking about experimentation for, you know, looking at things differently as a scientist. But also, I think experimentation works when you are going to do anything that where you have to put yourself out there. Because if you look at that as, okay, I fumbled, it was an experiment, that experiment failed, and now yes. I'm going to go to the next experiment. So I love that, you know, we can all make these mistakes. We can tinker, we can improve, our process, and we don't have to make it harder for ourselves. So what I love what you're bringing here, Kelly, is simplicity. You know what? We need to get out of our own way. I can honestly say my family was very supportive of me. And when I was a toddler, when I was 5, I had a lot of confidence. And then you kind of go through life and then you get in your own head, right? Yes. So, you know, then I had to recalibrate. And I think we all need to do that. And as you said, it's always going to be a bit of a struggle. But mm-hmm. after you do something, you always feel good. And I can also say that even after I do something where I have a little fudge here and there, I still feel great that I stretched myself.
Yes. It's two mindsets. It's like, am I going to take on a victim mindset where I live in this black and white world of I've either passed or failed, right? Because there's no room for learning. Or do I live in a world with, you know, a growth mindset, an open mindset, a creator's mindset that says, oh, what can I learn from this? And I had to, oh boy, like when I left corporate, I was very like, okay, I am not going to launch this until it's perfect, because I just don't want all the criticism or critique that comes, or what will my peers think if this program doesn't work, or et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, when I went and started my own business, I realized how expensive that mindset was, because if you're not out there producing and trying and testing and learning and experimenting, you aren't making any money, because I didn't have a paycheck coming in every 2 weeks like I did in corporate. And so I agree that experimentation mindset is something that's so valuable, because if you're just testing and learning and you have the mindset of curiosity and what am I learning from this, mm-hmm. you're probably going to have a lot more success, because you're putting your work into action and getting into action, which builds feelings of confidence.
Totally. And I have to say, I was talking to my husband the other day and I said, you know, I love working for myself, because I feel like when I was a little kid and we would play store and we'd create these products and we'd have our money and we would all do all this pretending and our, you know, playing school too, right? Yeah. And we would make up our own curriculum and then we would try things, and you know what? It was fun. It was a lot of fun doing those kinds of things. And so yeah, it is about trying these new things. And as you said, curiosity, I love that word. So
yes.
I guess, you know, we kind of covered this, but imposter syndrome is kind of that what that also gets in the way. Mm-hmm. And I have this theory about, as we gain expertise, and I see this in myself and I also see it in my clients, because when I start my conversation with my clients, I ask them, what's your superpower? What makes you stand out compared to all of these other financial managers or executives or whatever it is? What makes you different? And always they come up with something different. I've been doing this for a long time and I've never had the same list of superpowers. And sometimes they know right away and sometimes they don't realize it. Mm-hmm. And I have to reflect back to them, this is really amazing. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it's become so easy. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that I do in my job seem so easy. I feel like, oh, anybody could do this. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, I think, I don't know if that's imposter syndrome, but it's kind of the sister of imposter syndrome.
Yeah, no, you're bringing up a really great point. I have a line in my book that says, owning your talents is the antidote to imposter syndrome. And so I have a client and she had been promoted, to higher levels. And when you get promoted to higher levels, you're sitting in higher level meetings, right? Exposure, new people with titles, compare and despair. Oh my gosh, why am I here? Imposter syndrome is that feeling I'm going to be found out, right? That I don't belong here and I'm not qualified. And that's all my success has been luck. And one of the things we talked about was, yeah, finding your genius zone. What is it that makes you, you? And so, you know, you said something, sometimes though, these things that we're so good at come so easy for us. And that's your first clue. Mm-hmm. Like what is so easy for you that everybody else is like, how did you do that in 20 minutes? And you're like, oh, can't everybody do that in 20 minutes?
Exactly.
Like that's probably a really big clue that that's a genius zone for you. And when you can own it and name it, like a whole world opens up for folks. And I think a whole world opens up, and you probably experience this too with your clients, like, can work really be this easy and enjoyable? I'm like, if you fill it with your genius zone activities, yeah, you can. Sure. But that's huge, is like really owning, what can you do better than anyone else? Like what makes you feel easy and in flow? Like my favorite question is, and I'd be curious what your clients, how they would answer this if you're building the resume, is like, what just makes you geek out at work? Like, when do you just feel geeky? Like, this is great. And you're nerding out and you're in flow and like time is flying. Like when you can start to own that about yourself, like, and that goes back to the authenticity question. That's the unique skill. That's the unique viewpoint. That's the unique perspective I bring to any situation. And when you remember that in those moments where you're tempted to compare and despair or doubt your abilities, it can really be a source of confidence that you can come back to. And in a resume too, beautiful, right? Because then like when you're writing a resume, you can really articulate that in a way that I'll just tell you as a former HR leader, like, thank you for people like you who help people craft their resumes that are short and not 6 pages long and are just very clear about their talents and their results. Because here's something a lot of people don't know. And I'll tell you as a former HR person, we really only have about 20 seconds to look through your resume. Right. So you got to get us right away.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then talking about that, where you're geeking out on something, you can bring that excitement and that personality to a meeting.
Yes.
You don't have to be the cool cat in the room either. That's another thing, you know, feeling like, you know, in your 20s, probably, especially, I remember this. I remember, oh, I have to act a certain way in these meetings, or they're not going to like me. But everybody knows, you know, I mean, we talk about this ad nauseum about the fact that nobody wants another Adam Grant, for example.
Yeah.
They want a first Kelly Thompson, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what we need to remember, that when we are original, that's really when we shine,
mm-hmm.
on a resume or in a meeting or in a presentation, right?
Absolutely. So well said.
Well, on that note, Kelly, thank you so much. This was really wonderful.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, I'm going to apply some of your lessons here. And I know that you've got some great downloads. You've got a book coming. What can we share here with our listeners?
Absolutely. So my book, Closing the Confidence Gap, Boost Your Peace, Your Potential, and Your Paycheck, releases on November 1st. And so the best place to go to learn about that is closingtheconfidencegap.com/book. But I love to hang out on Instagram and LinkedIn. And so on Instagram and LinkedIn, my forward slash is Kelly Rae Thompson, Kelly with an I, R-A-E Thompson. So those are two great ways to just get connected with me and see all the free stuff you can download and learn. And I would just love to get connected with you. So thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad that we're helping people in the universe be more clear on their resumes and their talents. So I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Well, it was fabulous. Thank you again so much, Kelly.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Career Cohort. I'm Emily Wong. You can find all my podcasts and blog posts at wordsofdistinction.net. And if you'd like to chat about how I can help you define the next step in your career and achieve your goals, head on over to the same website and book a time on my calendar for a free consult. In the meantime, please be sure to share, subscribe, rate, and review so we can continue to bring you great content.